Daniel chapter 5 is where we're at. And we'll begin reading in verses 1 through 16. Belshazzar the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before the thousands. Belshazzar, while he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels to which Nebuchadnezzar his father had taken out of the temple, which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his lords, his wives and his concubines may drink therefrom. Then they brought out the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God, which was in Jerusalem, and the king and his lords, his wives, and his concubines drank from them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver, of brass, of iron, of wood, and of stone. In the same hour came forth the fingers of a man's hand and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw part of the hand that wrote. Then the king's countenance was changed in him, and his thoughts troubled him. The joints of his loins were loosened, and his knees smote against another. The king cried aloud to bring the enchanters and the Chaldeans and the soothsayers. And the king spake to the wise men of Babylon, "Whosoever shall read this writing and show me the interpretation thereof shall be clothed with purple, have a chain of gold about his neck, and shall be the third ruler of the kingdom." Then came in all the king's wise men, but they could not read the writing nor make known to the king the interpretation. Then was King Belshazzar greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him, and his lords were perplexed. Now the queen, by reason of the words of the king and his lords, came into the banquet house. And the queen spake and said, "O king, live forever. Let not thy thoughts trouble you, nor let your countenance be changed. There is a man in your kingdom, in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And in the days of your father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, were found in him. And the king Nebuchadnezzar, your father, the king, I say, your father made him master of the magicians, the enchanters, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. For as much as an exceedingly excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding and interpreting of dreams, and showing the dark sentences and dissolving the doubts were found in the same Daniel, who the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will show you the interpretation." Then was Daniel brought in before the king. The king spake unto Daniel, "Are you Daniel who are of the children of the captivity of Judea, whom the king my father brought out of Judah? I have heard of you, that the spirit of the gods is in you, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom is found in you. Now the wise men, the enchanters, have been brought before me, that they should read this writing, make know unto me the interpretation thereof. But they could not show the interpretation of the thing. But I have heard of you, that you can give interpretation and dissolve doubts. Now, if you can read the writing and make known to me the interpretation thereof, you shall be clothed in purple and have a chain of gold about your neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." And we'll stop there. So we have here the court scene. First point on your study guide is the kings of Babylon during the time of Daniel. Now, there's a reason why I'm giving you this. And that reason will be made known here shortly. Now, the words in parentheses are the names that we are used to. Okay? The other names are the name of God, like Nebu, Kazuri, Ursa. May the god Nebu guard over my son. That's the meaning of that. So the words in parentheses, they are what we know: Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar, Evil Merodach, Neri Glissar, Labashi, Marduk, and Nabonidus. These are the kings during the time of Daniel. It ranges from 626 Nebuchadnezzar to 539. Okay? Now, the reason why I want you to know this is because several years ago I was teaching Daniel chapter 5. And I pointed out in my study, I pointed out to the class that although Daniel chapter 5 says that Belshazzar was the son of Nebuchadnezzar, he is not the son of Nebuchadnezzar. And from the back of the room, a demanding female voice came out, "God said he was." I said, "Excuse me? God said he was. It says so in the Bible." So briefly, I went through the history of the kings of Babylon. And then after the class, I went up to the lady and I told her, I said, "Listen, I understand what the Bible says, but if you'll just bear with me," and she just would not. I could tell that I was a heretic in her eyes. And she was very forceful on her beliefs. And I understood where she was coming from. I never saw her again. Never did. And I don't know if she wasn't going to listen to any class or any explanation of the text, or if God answered my prayer and removed that thorn from my flesh, whichever one it was. But if you'll look up here at the chart up here, Nabopolassar was the father of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar was the father of Emil Marduk, or Evil Merodach. And at Evil Merodach, the bloodline of Nebuchadnezzar ends. Nergal-Sharezer was the brother-in-law to Nebuchadnezzar. And we have Lashmar-Marduk, which was the son of Nergal-Sharezer, who was murdered by Nabonidus. But the bloodline ends, the Nebuchadnezzar's bloodline ends at Evil Merodach in 562-560. Now, what is interesting when you study this is that Nabonidus, by most accounts, and I say most accounts, was not even a Chaldean. He was an Assyrian. There are some who dispute it, but there is overwhelming evidence that he was, and he was of the city of Herod. Belshazzar was his son. So you can see that there is no blood link in the line of kings from Nabopolassar to Nabonidus. Is everybody clear on that point? Is everybody written down these names?
No, go back.
Go back. Now, the reason why, and we'll get into this point here, the reason why this is important is because sometimes as you read not only biblical history, but you'll read secular history, you'll see so-and-so son of so-and-so, so-and-so son of so-and-so, which makes it sound like, you know, it was his father. Let me know when you guys are through writing.
Are those last two dates supposed to be the same?
556 and 539?
On the last two people.
Oh, okay. Where did I mess up at? You got to watch out for these computers. 556 is the only date for the Labash Marduk. He only ruled 9 months and he was murdered. Yeah, I try to double check what my computer does, but it doesn't always work out. The history of Kings is an interesting one. Like I said, both in the Bible and both in secular, and they will help you understand certain things. Everybody pretty much close there?
One more.
One more? Okay. Actually, Linda, I put that mistake up there just to see if anybody could catch it. You get an A. Okay? All right. Now, so Nabonidus was not a Chaldean. Overwhelming evidence, although it is disputed by some, but overwhelming evidence, he was an Assyrian, and Belshazzar was his co-regent. Now, point number two on your study guide, and this is why I'm bringing this first point out. Four reasons for the use of father and son. Number one is used to speak of successors instead of not always bloodline. It is used to speak of successors and not always bloodline. There are theologians like Bonpflower who takes this position. The next one, Belshazzar may be the adopted son of Nebuchadnezzar. Some hold that position. E.J. Young, he holds that position. But as we can tell from history, Belshazzar was Nabonidus' son. The third reason, Nabonidus may have married Nebuchadnezzar's widow, and there is that possibility. From the time of Nebuchadnezzar to Nabonidus was 7 years. So he could have married one of Nebuchadnezzar's wives to claim throne, authority to have the throne of Babylon. There are those who hold that position. And then the fourth reason, inscriptions prove that Nabonidus married Nicrosis, which was the daughter of Nebuchadnezzar. Daughtry and others hold that position. Now, these are four positions that most theologians hold. There may be others, but these are the four that I've run across. Let me suggest to you, and it's not set in stone, but point A is used to speak of successors. Throughout history, you will see that whoever was the predominant king upon a throne, and there were several kings before Nabonidus, but who was ever the dominant king, or Nabopolassar, excuse me, whoever was the dominant king on the throne usually carries the name throughout the realm of that country. Turn, if you will, to 2 Kings chapter 18. Let me give you a biblical example. 2 Kings chapter 18. I think that's what I want. Yeah, 2 Kings 18. In 2 Kings 18, beginning in verse 1, now it came to pass in the third year of Hoshea, son of Elah, the king of Israel, that Hezekiah, the son of Ahaz, king of Judea, began to reign. 25 years old was he when he began to reign, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Abi, the daughter of Zechariah. Verse 3, and he did that which was right in the eyes of Jehovah, according to all that David his father had done. Who was the father of Hezekiah? Look at your text. Ahaz, that's right. But yet, in verse 3, we see that he is also called the son of David. Now, that carries a bloodline also. Don't make that mistake. But I'll use this as an example to show that whenever you see the son of whoever, it doesn't necessarily mean that he is the son, the literal son of that individual. Okay? Does everybody understand what I just said? All right. So that's why I lean to the first point, used to speak of successors of the king who was the predominant or who brought the glory, the preeminence to that throne of that time. That's why Belshazzar is called son of Nebuchadnezzar. Pretty clear? Okay, so if you ever see that woman, make sure you bring that out to her, okay? Because I never saw her again. Okay. Now, point three is just for a trivial question, I guess. The difference between a Babylonian party and a Persian party. If you notice here, in the Babylonian party, both men and women were at the party. Men and women are at the party. When you study the book of Esther, you will see that men are in one party, women are in the other party. There's a separation. And there's the difference between a Persian party and a Babylonian party. And like I said, that is just basically a trivial question that I thought may pique your interest as you go through that. Point four on the study guide. What was the reason for the a scene in chapter 5 of God's judgment in Babylon? Now, I want you to understand, I want you to picture the feast that Belshazzar has. Now, history will point out some of these parties were big. We went to an outing yesterday. There were several people there. You know, we were fighting for the only shade tree on the lot. And there was only, what, 50, 60 people? These parties here could range anywhere, I have read, from 15 to 20,000 people. It's a big party. They would usually eat at the first of the party. They would eat. And then there became what was popularly known as a drinking game. They would drink, and they would continue to drink. And that seems to be what's going on here. Finally, they had drunk enough and become drunk enough that Belshazzar had a little bit of pseudo courage. He says, bring out the golden vessels that Nebuchadnezzar took from the golden temple. Now, I read a couple where it said that this was unheard of during these times. They may claim that their gods were stronger than the other nation's god, but they did not desecrate. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. Like I said, I only read a couple on that. But this shows the arrogance of Belshazzar to not only desecrate the temple vessels, but to insult Jehovah God. And if you'll notice in verse 5, it is at this time that the fingers of a man's hand appears before Belshazzar, writing on the wall. Now you may ask the question, well, what's the difference? It's just metal, right? It's just gold and silver cups. Nothing special about them, right? Wrong. These were vessels that were to be used for God's own purpose, for whatever he had designed these vessels to be used for. When Moses approached the burning bush upon the mountain, what did God say to him? Take off the shoes off your feet, for why?
Holy ground.
This ground is holy ground. Now, what made it holy? Belonged to the Lord. When the children of Israel came out of Egypt, they came to Mount Sinai. God gives his law, but he also gave instructions that no one was to touch the mountain, not even an animal. The mountain itself became holy to the Lord. So when Belshazzar uses these vessels for any other reason than what they were designed for, he was insulting God. Now, with that in mind, I want you to turn to 1 Peter chapter 2. I think we can learn a good lesson out of this. In 1 Peter chapter 2, beginning in verse 9, he says, "But you," talking to the church, "but you are an elect race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation," notice, "a people for God's own possession, that you may show forth the excellencies of Him who called you out of darkness into His marvelous light." Now, I want you to notice what Peter is telling the church there. We are not just a group of people who have obeyed the gospel. We are not just a group of people who have assurance of the eternal home if we remain faithful. We are a people who are of God's possession. We belong to the Lord. 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 20 will tell us that we have been bought with a price. So we are no longer ourselves. And we have a duty to do as vessels of the Lord. That is to show forth the excellencies of Him who called us, whatever that may be. If you and I act in any other way that would insult the Lord, that would be in contradiction of what He would have us to do, we have done the same thing as what Belshazzar does in bringing out the golden vessels. I think we need to clearly understand that. So the judgment of chapter 5 is because Belshazzar desecrated, insulted, used the things of Jehovah for purposes that it was not to be used for. He calls in the Chaldeans, the wise men, the soothsayers. Nobody can interpret, read the writing or interpret it. Verse 10, the queen. And then the queen comes in. Who is this queen? Nobody knows for sure, but let me suggest unto you that this is probably Nebuchadnezzar's widow. If you notice when you get up to verse 2 of chapter 5, you'll see that his wives and his women of pleasure were with him. The queen was not there. Now, there are those who say it might be the queen mother, meaning the queen mother of Nabonidus. Nabonidus. But there's records to show that she had already passed away. So in all probability, it is the widow of Nebuchadnezzar. And I say that because if you notice her words, she tells Belshazzar a brief history of Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar's interaction. Now, once again, that's not set in stone either, but it appears from the context of the lesson, it is Nebuchadnezzar's widow. She tells him to call Daniel. She knows of Daniel. And then point 6 on the study guide, the characteristics in Daniel 5 that separate Daniel from the men of Babylon. Well, we see this in verse 12. He is excellent. He has an excellent spirit. He has knowledge and understanding. He interprets dreams and shows of dark sentences and dissolves doubt. So just put down verse 12. These are the qualifications. If you want to know the true meaning, she says to Belshazzar, don't call these charlatans. Call the true prophet. Call a prophet. Daniel is brought before Belshazzar. In verse 14, notice Belshazzar says, are you that Daniel? I've heard of you. And if you can do what I ask, I will give you a cloth of purple, a gold chain around your neck, and give you third rule of the kingdom. So there's the court scene. For time's sake, we won't read 17 through 30. You guys have already read it three times, I know, because that was what I requested of you, to read chapters 1 through 6 at least three times. Pick up in verse 17. That'll go first point. 17 through 30 is the indictment, the sentence, and the execution. So Daniel is brought before Belshazzar. Belshazzar says, if you can interpret the writing on the wall, I'll give you a cloth of purple, a clothing in purple, gold chain around your neck, and give you third rule of the kingdom. Verse 17, notice Daniel's response. Then Daniel answered and said, before the king, let your gifts be to yourself and give your wards to another. In other words, he's just saying, keep them. I don't need it. Now, Daniel is not being rude here. All throughout the book of Daniel, we will see that he has always been respectful to kings and rulers. Never once have we seen him to where he has ever been disrespectful. So what he is doing here, he's not being rude, but he is giving clear speech. And no doubt he's giving this clear speech. Number one, he doesn't want what Belshazzar wants to give him. And number two, he already knows the interpretation of the writing on the wall. His response is clear. And he may not have liked Belshazzar. It is said that Belshazzar was a good soldier, maybe an excellent soldier, but he was a poor politician. And that may have had something to do with it too. But he is not being disrespectful. Do not read that in the text. He says, keep your gifts, but I will read unto you the interpretation. But before he does, I want you to notice that he gives in 18 and 21, he gives a brief historical account of the event of Nebuchadnezzar and the one that we covered last week, the humbling of Nebuchadnezzar. He points out that God, once again, one of the reasons why Daniel was written was to show forth the sovereignty of God. He points out that God gave Nebuchadnezzar, bless you, he gave him power, he gave him greatness, he gave him glory, he gave him majesty. All the people, all the nations, all the languages within the Babylonian realm, they were given into his hand. And Daniel will point out, not only was he king over them, but their lives depended upon him. He had the power to pronounce judgment of death or give them the mercy of life. All these things God gave unto Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, and yet Nebuchadnezzar rose himself up in a prideful way, and God humbled him. But God brought him back again. And then when you get down here to verse 22, He says, and you, his son, O Belshazzar, has not humbled your heart, notice, though you knew all this. This was nothing that was kept secret. Everybody who was anybody knew the historical account of the humbling of Nebuchadnezzar. No one accountable is ignorant of the will of God. Even Paul will say that in Romans chapter 1, verses 18 and following. No one accountable is ignorant of the will of God. God has made it, or has revealed unto all of mankind, his will. But throughout history, we have seen nation after nation after nation commit spiritually, morally, and intellectually suicide. Simply because they ignore the will of God. And history is sure of it. JFK in his inaugural speech said that if there's one thing we have learned from history, we have learned nothing from history. And I think that today's days in our country, we see that in action again. We may not have the gods of stone and the gods of wood, but we have the gods of immorality. We have the gods of sports figures. We have the gods of politicians. And instead of listening to the will of God, we're listening to those gods, and those gods are bringing us down just like it's bringing down nation after nation after nation. We are committing spiritually, morally, and intellectually suicide. And man is without excuse. Verses 23 and 24 gives us the reason why the fingers of the hand appeared upon the wall. Now, point three under the indictment, sentence, and execution, last page of the study guide, the meanings of the word on the wall. The word mene is to number. The word mene is to number. This passive participle, the best way that I can explain that is just it's past tense, okay? It's already been done. If there's anybody in here that's good in language that wants to stand up here and explain this, I'll welcome you to it. But anyway, it's basically just a past tense. But it not only to count, but also to fix the limit. It gives an end or finish to it. And like that jug of milk I drank the other day, it had an expiration date on it, which was a few days out. But when you mix it with a chocolate chip cookie, it doesn't matter. So mene means to number, to fix a limit, to end, to finish, an expiration day. God has numbered the kingdom of Babylon. It is finished. The next word, tikal, also, past tense, means to weigh. All the old courthouses, I've never been to the one in Denver. I don't know what it looks like. But I know the one in Tennessee and other courthouses that I've seen. They always had the woman of justice up there, the blindfold around it. And in her hand, she has a balance beam. You've seen them. It's got the two containers it contains. And this is the idea here. He's been weighed. Nebuchadnezzar has been weighed, put in the balance, and he is trying to, and God is showing him how he stands with the standards of God. Boom. He doesn't measure up. He's been weighed, and he doesn't measure. He doesn't balance. Now, here's something that you and I can get from that figure. Is that in the balance of our lives, all our good deeds, all our benevolence, all our Lord's suppers, all our attendance, all the good and gracious things of life, if it isn't doesn't have Christ in our life, boom, we're out of balance. And we need to understand that. And then the word Perez. Notice in verse 26 or 25, it's meeny, meeny, tickle, you farsen. But when you get down into 28, we see the word Perez. Farsen is a plural form of the word Perez. It means to break or to divide. The you is equivalent to our conjunction, the word and. In other words, you have been numbered, you have been weighed, and you have been divided. The word Perez may indicate or may allude to the Persians. To the word Persians. The kingdom will be divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. Now, as we were looking at this, and I was thinking, none of us knows the end of our time. None of us do. Time can end for us quickly. But if you had the opportunity and you were outside of Christ, if you were outside of the fellowship of God, if you were outside of His grace and His mercy, would you want to hear that your days were numbered? Sobering thought. Sobering thought. All right, we're running out of time, so let's go. Point four, the description of the judgment. Number one, it was a palace judgment. It was a palace judgment. No one, rich or poor, politically or unpolitically, kings or peasants, are outside of the law of God. No one. So it's a palace judgment. It's also a silent judgment. What I mean by that, there was no flashing of lights, no booming thunders, just a couple of fingers writing on the wall that changed an insolent braggart to a coward. So it was a palace judgment, it was a silent judgment, and it was a public judgment. It was done in view of everyone. All the world saw this judgment. And then point D, it was the decisive judgment. It was a decisive judgment. The fall of Babylon, by most accounts, and there's other things involved in there too, but basically what happened, the army of Cyrus diverted the river of the Euphrates River, where that the army could just walk under the wall and go into it, and basically Babylon fell without firing a shot. If you'll notice in verse 30, in that night, Belshazzar was saying. The date of the end of the Babylonian kingdom, 12 October 539 B.C. 12 October 539 B.C. Verse 30 ends chapter 5. Verse 31 will pick up. And Darius the Mede received the kingdom being about 62 years old. Next week we'll cover Daniel chapter 6. Go ahead and read 6. And if you want to, go ahead and read chapter 7. You can begin chapter 7. Chapter 7 will begin the apocalyptic version of the book of Daniel. God bless you.